Look around you. That wrestling match on television isn't just entertainment. It's an elaborate morality play. The frothy bubbles in your laundry detergent aren't just cleaning agents. They're selling you a fantasy of purity and luxury. In Roland Barthes' groundbreaking work, Mythologies, the ordinary transforms into the extraordinary through penetrating cultural analysis. Before semiotics became fashionable in academic circles, Barthes was dissecting the secret language of wrestling matches, soap advertisements, and children's toys, revealing how these seemingly innocent cultural artifacts perpetuate ideological systems. His revolutionary approach shows us that what appears natural in our daily lives is often carefully constructed to maintain existing power structures. By teaching us to read the hidden codes in everyday objects and practices, Barthes hands us the tools to see beyond surface meanings and question the common sense narratives that shape our world. Wrestling isn't sport, but spectacle. Unlike boxing's competitive excellence, wrestling presents exaggerated displays of suffering and justice like ancient Greek drama. Each wrestler's physique serves as a basic sign. The repulsive villain with his sagging body embodies baseness, while the handsome hero represents besieged virtue. Their bodies provide the fundamental text, elaborated through obvious gestures. Every wrestling element functions as immediate pantomime. Punishment must be spectacularly visible. The forearm smash brings catastrophe to maximum obviousness, while defeated wrestlers collapse in exemplary abasement. This creates what Barthes calls the perfect intelligibility of reality, where signs correspond perfectly to causes without ambiguity. Similarly, in historical films, Roman identity often reduces to a single overwhelming sign, the fringe hairstyle. This distinctive frontal lock makes characters unmistakably Roman despite American features. Other persistent signs include sweat, streaming down faces as a moral indicator. Virtuous men sweat to demonstrate virtue contemplating crime, while conspirators sweat with treachery and righteous characters with moral fury. These signs reveal a fundamental ambiguity, superficial yet pretending to depth, intentional yet appearing spontaneous. Cinema doesn't present history, but rather recognizable signs standing in for historical reality. Cleaning product marketing portrays products as magical. Chlorinated fluids become liquid fire that kills dirt, while powders liberate objects from imperfection. Ads emphasize deep and foamy qualities, suggesting penetration equals effectiveness and foam equals luxury, transforming cleaning into a mythological quest for purity. Children's toys reveal how adults view children as miniature versions of themselves. French toys typically replicate adult institutions, army, post office, medicine, transport. These toys prefigure the adult world, conditioning children to accept these realities as natural. Unlike blocks that foster creativity, these toys position children as users rather than creators. Plastic embodies modern alchemy, its name suggesting infinite transformation. At exhibitions, crowds witness the magical conversion of crystals into shiny objects, each finished form presenting an enigma of origin. Yet plastic success comes with a trade-off. It barely exists as substance. Unlike historical imitation materials that mimic luxury, plastic has climbed down to become ordinary, the first magical substance embracing mundanity, reducing nature from idea to mere raw material. Wine functions as France's totem drink, a national possession as fundamental as its cultural heritage. This dry substance supports contradictory myths. It resembles blood yet quenches thirst, transforms weakness to strength, and converts silence to speech. It gives laborers heart for work while offering intellectuals access to natural virility. This universality creates powerful cultural conformism. Non-drinkers face integration problems, while participants gain immediate social acceptance. wine provides such moral foundation that even crimes committed under its influence become matters of fate rather than character flaws. Yet its mythology conceals its entanglement with capitalist production and colonial history. Steak parallels wine's mythology, representing meat in its purest state and transmitting bull-like strength to consumers. Its prestige derives from its quasi-rawness, with visible blood suggesting ancient ambrosia and primal vitality. The French vocabulary for cooking degrees expresses blood imagery: saignant, bright arterial flow; blue, dark venous blood; or a point, indicating a linnet. Steak functions as both nature and morality incarnate, supposedly redeeming even French intellectuals from accusations of cerebral dryness. Garbo's face represents a pivotal cinema moment when human visages wielded unprecedented audience power. Her face object featured a pristine alabaster-like surface with plaster-like opacity. Only her eyes, described as tremulous wounds, pierced this perfect facade, creating contrast between immutable surface and emotional depth. Unlike traditional theatrical masks suggesting hidden mysteries, Gargo's face was an absolute mask, a complete statement itself. It presented a platonic idea of the human face, transcending gender while remaining iconic. Nicknamed the Divine, she retreated from public life rather than allow audiences to witness time's effect on her legendary beauty. Einstein's brain occupies a similar mythical position, representing intellectual rather than aesthetic perfection. The paradox lies in how it symbolizes supreme intelligence while being reduced to a mechanical object, the ultimate thinking machine. After his death, the physical organ became a contested artifact, fought over like a sacred relic. Popular mythology often depicted Einstein connected to electrical apparatus while contemplating relativity, reducing genius to measurable energy produced by biological machinery. Myth isn't an object, but a mode of signification that can attach to anything. Its power transforms history into nature, making cultural constructions appear inevitable. A black soldier saluting the French flag represents French imperialism presented as natural patriotism. Myth operates through a clever maneuver. It takes an existing sign, empties it of historical context, then fills it with a new concept. The original meaning isn't destroyed, but distanced, held as an alibi. This creates what Barth calls a constantly moving turnstile between meaning and form. Myth is speech stolen and restored that returns appearing naturalized. The bourgeoisie maintains power partly through myth-making. While acknowledging capitalism economically, politically it struggles to name itself, and ideologically disappears through ex-nomination, defining itself as the class that refuses to be named. Its values appear not as ideology, but as common sense. Revolutionary language initially resists mythification because it aims to transform reality rather than preserve it as image. However, myths emerge on the left when revolution becomes the left, when it accepts wearing a mask and generating innocent meta-language. Barth's revolutionary contribution is teaching us that mythology is a language we can learn to read. By recognizing hidden codes in advertisements, films, wrestling matches, and everyday objects, he equips us with tools to resist manipulation and see beyond surface meanings. The mythologist reveals alienation beneath society's assumed innocence, yet occupies an uncomfortable position, speaking a meta-language that unveils but doesn't act, distanced from both revolutionary action and myth consumers. We must reconcile reality and humanity, description and explanation, object and knowledge. The goal isn't cold demystification of everyday life, but understanding how meaning is constructed and manipulated. When we learn to read surrounding myths, seeing how wine signifies more than fermented grapes, how plastic embodies transformation, how a wrestler's gestures encode moral drama, we gain freedom from unconscious manipulation. We become active participants in creating meaning rather than passive consumers of manufactured myths, enabling authentic choice and genuine cultural creation.